You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Manchester United Redcast 2 days after that dismal defeat at Old Trafford. We are back. Well, I don't even know. I don't even know. We've taken 2 days to sum up, to muster up the energy to actually talk about this. Manchester United losing 2-1 at home to Crystal Palace when, well, let's be fair, we all predicted an easy win. Joining me to chew the fat this evening, Richard Amofa, Sports Journo.
How you doing, mate? You okay?
Yeah, good to have you back on, pal. And Nav Singh as well.
Good evening.
Often the voice of reason. on this pod. But, gents, Manchester United 1, Crystal Palace 2. I was at West Ham versus Watford, and for anyone who knows the job I do, obviously I work on a big, big radio station, and we cover football. But the problem is that my bit of kit that I have that connects me to the rest of the programme, if you like, wasn't working properly. So all I heard was, here comes Van Arnold down the left-hand side, cut. That's it. And I'm like, no, come on. No, you can't do this. And then suddenly I hear, Palace have scored and they're going to win for the first time. I was like, oh, shit. Like, you know, like literally just a little bit. And I'm just like, okay, great. Thank you. Absolutely fantastic. Where were you when Palace scored?
It seems like it's some kind of momentous moment in history. I mean, I actually, I play for a local side here, so obviously, I've played my game and, you know, got back to the change room. And as we're walking back, you know, we hear, oh, you know, United are losing. At this point, it was 1-0, had the siren and whatnot. And then everyone's saying it's 2-1. At these times, you know, dressing room banter, you just ignore it. And then I check my phone, actually gone through Twitter, and see that we've lost a game 2-1. And it's, I think, what had turned from a decent Saturday's display in my game anyway, just everything just went downhill from there. So it just kind of turned me from a really good mood to a bad mood, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I was at home. I'll be honest. I was following it on a combination of radio and various United forums. And I switched off after the equaliser. I thought, you know, forget it. We're not going to get a winner here. So I had a bit of a bigger shot coming when I actually saw that it was 2-1. I had to do a double take. Just shocking.
Crystal Palace went at Old Trafford, for the first time. They beat Manchester United for the first time in the Premier League, I believe. I think that is the record now or something like that. I don't think they've beaten us in Selhurst ever. But I know they beat us at Old Trafford in the League Cup, but they definitely have never beat us in the Premier League at Old Trafford. I don't think anyone expected that. What did you make of the lineup? What did you make of the team selection? What did you make of the way we played?
I'll let you go first, Nav.
Okay, so where do we begin? Lineup, first of all. Look, I didn't have any fundamental issues when I saw the lineup. Obviously, it was the same starting 11 that he picked against Wolves. United were at home. I looked at it on paper and I thought, you know what? There's width in the side with James. We've got the pace there. I just felt that we would be far too strong. I thought we would overrun Palace with quick movement, with balls in behind. With, you know, I was thinking this would be a riot, frankly, looking at the Palace back line. Looking at the lack of pace, I was delighted when I saw Gary Cahill starting for Palace. I thought Rashford and Martial would have an absolute field day against him. I could not see any other outcome in terms of the lineup that was picked. In terms of how we played, I think it just shows the level of inconsistency at the club. In fairness, the first two displays, I think we have been moving the ball around a lot quicker. We've been a lot more positive. And for whatever reason, on Saturday, it just seemed to revert to that pass, move the ball sideways, move the ball back, indecision in the final third, unable to spring our attackers into the right positions to really do damage.
I mean, genuinely, listen, obviously, you know, I got the whole shebang in terms of commentary on the radio. I don't know if you were listening to the same one as me. Were you listening to the same one as me now?
I was listening to Talk Sport with Adrian Durham, and I was following the Red Cafe forum, the match day ticker.
Well, there you go. That's all my respect for you. Go on, pal. But I was listening to, of course, Dennis on BBC Radio 5 Live, because I was working on 5 Live, but it was so, like, draining listening to it. I thought we looked all right in some of the phases we attacked in. You know, we moved well. I want to pick up on the point of Dan James, because I think, you know, this kid is going to be damaged by the media this year, in the sense of he's come from the Championship, a league where he was hacked down, and because he's playing in the Championship for Swansea, no one really gives a shit. No one cares, you know? He's playing for Manchester United now, arguably the biggest club in the world. And what's happened is now he's getting hacked down left, right and centre. But now, you know, there's this whole diving thing that's come in. Now he got, you know, let's be fair, he got hacked down by Luka Milivojevic again, who, by the way, I cannot believe Luka Milivojevic was still on the field. You know, I've got a lot of time for Palace. I've got a lot of time for their fans. And I think Luka Milivojevic is actually a half-decent player. But how many times did he commit fouls and get away with it?
This is so true. He did exactly the same thing in the previous game against Sheffield United. So many fouls. There's so many, like, little niggly fouls. And he ends up, he does get booked for it, but then he always finds a way to just stay on the field. And I don't know how we got away with it again on Saturday. Just so many, just little niggles here, late kicks here, late kicks there. Somehow we're still in the field. I agree with you. It's something that really bugged me when I was watching the game back.
I think you add to that the Gary Cahill incident as well, which I'm still stunned at how that cannot be a red card. You know, what else can it be when your centre forward is on the edge of the box with no other defenders between him and the keeper? How can that not be a goal scoring opportunity? That was just a clear red. I think even Cahill was shocked that it wasn't given.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? With VAR, like, I know it's a contentious, like, thing. It's here to stay, and I'm happy with it. But it's the people implementing VAR which is going to be the issue. Because, as you said, how can that be checked and he not be sent off for that? I don't get it. The same with the other penalty incidents. How can you say that they're not penalties? Or the Dan James yellow card for diving. It was a clear foul. How can you not see that?
This is what we're going to come on to. We're going to end up talking about VAR. And you know what? Fuck it, let's do it. Why did they not check the Martial penalty? One. Two, Dan James has been booked for diving again. And nothing, like, no one's checked anything. VAR has not, you know, checked anything. I understand that, you know, they can't really check free kicks and stuff like that. The Martial penalty was a clear penalty. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It was probably even more clear than the actual one that we got. But, you know, he's turned, he's swiveled, and he's done really, really well. And it's an embarrassment. It actually is an embarrassment. I don't get what VAR is about. It's supposed to make the game fairer, but let's be fair, we've lost chances there.
At the end of the day, I think if you know, the correct decision was made when Cahill when he should have been sent off. I'm not saying that we need a red card to beat Crystal Palace, of course, but you know, if these things are applied properly, we probably go on to equalise quicker and then score 2, 3 and 4, to be honest. And I think games are turned on decisions like that. I'm not saying that, like I said, we should rely on decisions to beat Palace at home, and it's definitely not a cop-out, but that is just a fact of the matter. And, you know, the referees got a pass before by saying, oh, the game's so quick, how, you know, they struggle to keep up, blah, 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 it's a difficult job. And I do agree, it's a difficult job, but at the same time, you know, these are key decisions which are going, you know, against our favour, and it's impacting the game. And it's not right. As you say, how are these things not checked? How is somebody there with various monitors in front of him making the wrong decision? I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the VAR argument is one side. Let's face it, this referee had an absolute shocker. You know, however we have four or five decisions there that frankly, and look, we may be biased when we're talking about this because we're looking at it from one side, but there's four or five highly debatable decisions there. Any one of those would have likely turned the game and the result in United's favour.
We may be biased now, but with all due respect, we're being analytical. We've watched the game. I've literally sat and pored through it. Stop, pause. The referee was an absolute shambles. Paul Tierney, I mean, genuinely, an absolute disgrace. That was so, so poor. And, you know, whether or not we would have converted those chances in a penalty or whatever, a free kick, you know, the fact of the matter is that he repeatedly let things go off. Again, we're talking about Cahill. We're also talking about Milivojevic. The correct decision, I think, was the Rashford penalty incident where Rashford's gone round the defender and sort of lost his balance. You know, I thought, yeah, fair enough, that's not a penalty. But again, the Martial one, why aren't they checking this on VAR? Why is Dan James allowed to repeatedly get hacked down? It's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace.
Yeah,
I do feel a bit guilty because, yeah, listen, This, you know, we can turn and say that we've been robbed, but I don't want it to mask the fact that of how, you know, how badly we played, because that's what people will turn around and say, oh, you know, you're blaming VAR for not winning the game. No, because we should be beating Palace at home. It's frustrating. I don't really want to focus on VAR too much because, you know, there's fundamental issues within our play that we shouldn't have to rely on certain decisions, but at the same time, it is a massive frustration, and it's not just us who's affected. No, there are so many other shocking decisions. And I think what annoys me the most is when these things are analysed on various television programmes, and they normally have a referee and an ex-referee to give his expert opinion on as to why the referee made certain decisions. But what's happening these days is that the referees are just backing each other up. So it's just, you know, is this what it's going to be now? Just a referee's union? Oh, I don't want to undermine the referees. I'm just going to go with what he says. That just completely undermines VAR as a whole concept. And until this whole referee's union is, you know, put to one side and they actually, you know, referee properly, these incidents are going to keep happening. More and more clubs are going to be, aggrieved by these kind of decisions. And it's just really frustrating that every week, you know, the same things are happening where VAR is working fine, but the people implementing it, and they've got the extra time to do so, are still getting it wrong. I just can't get my head around it.
Yeah, it really is baffling. It really is baffling, indeed. Moving on to the actual performance. From what you've seen, did you think we played poorly in the sense of attacking-wise? I think, but again, we're going to go back onto the fact that there's a lack of depth, a significant lack of depth, and that's hindering us, if you like. But I think the actual passage of play, the phase of play for the Dan James goal was actually excellent. You know, that one-touch passing, bang, pass move. That's one thing I can actually turn around and say, you know what, they did that well.
Yeah, I don't think it was all bad news despite the results. You're right, that was a great passage of play, and then that finish for Dan James to show that level of composure in, I mean, what's that? That's his second start in the Premier League, his third appearance. That finish was fantastic, absolutely fantastic, you know, top draw stuff. There were some signs of positivity in that play, but and you've just touched upon it, the lack of depth, unfortunately, means that when things aren't going our way, it's very hard, I think, to genuinely change them. I mean, what would you do? What do you do if the midfield isn't performing right now? You know, I just don't see any options. Fred, again, nowhere to be seen. Are we hoping that James Garner is suddenly going to become the answer in there? McTominay works hard. Good guy, undoubtedly. He's got some good potential around him. But is he ready yet to take on the mantle of being the main man in midfield? Pogba, for every great thing he does, will also lose the ball in unfortunate situations, will also overreact when things aren't going his way. So, yeah, I mean, I still struggle with the squad depth in terms of the choices that Solskjaer currently has available if he wants to fundamentally change anything.
Is the fact that we didn't go for Bruno Fernandes or any other option now just looking like an even stupid himself? We all knew this was going to happen. We all knew this was going to happen. Are we sitting there just going, what is going on? By the way, Romelu Lukaku scored for Inter tonight against Lecce. They've 4-0 up against Lecce in Serie A. But I just thought I'd just, enlighten your ears with that news. But, the fact that we didn't actually go out and sign a creative midfielder, are we sort of throwing it back to, throwing it back like 10 years when we were desperate for a midfielder and desperate and desperate and desperate and we got Anderson and Owen Hargreaves, who needs a lot of paper? Where are we? I'm really confused. My head kind of hurts with this now.
Listen, that kind of performance we've seen at Old Trafford for the last 6 years, in terms of keeping the ball really well, passing from side to side, dominating possession, but no end product, no cutting edge. We spoke about this last week. And it's probably been spoken about for years before. Take it back to the Louis van Gaal era, where we just have lots of the ball and not doing anything with it. And again, a lot of it stems down to our midfield, especially, our number 10. As much as I love Lingard for his pressing and stuff like that, and I've got nothing against him, I really like him as a player, but they're just in certain games, you just need that bit of quality in that number 10 area when it's tight, just for someone to find that bit of space, create a bit of magic and make something happen. And that's just not Lingard. Lingard is someone who, like I said, is good for pressing, good for breaking past the strikers, and really good work rate. But as you say, we don't have anyone in that number 10 position to kind of get between the lines and make something happen. I know you've got Mata there, but maybe it's past, as I said last week. And it's just going to be this performance that we saw on Saturday, we're going to see about 6 or 7 times this season. Because
is Lingard way from for United?
Pardon?
Is Lingard done with United? Tell me, is he done?
No. Not at all.
Is he just in this sort of where is he? Because let's be fair, he's been getting absolutely lambasted on social media by fans for the past sort of 4 or 5 months, if you like, since the back end of last season. He hasn't turned up this season. Yesterday was atrocious. I mean, the co-commentator on 5 was sort of begging for Juan Mata to come on. Whether Mata was going to make that much of a difference or not, maybe his legs are gone. But, genuinely, where is Lingard right now? What's happening with him?
I think it's easy to have a go at Lingard. As I mentioned, I did point him out, but is he not being used properly? I don't know. I've never seen him as an effective number 10. So whose fault is it? Every kid's been played there. He's obviously been played there for his pressing style, his high intensity, which is great, and I love that. I love Lingard. I'm a big fan of his. But in this particular system, especially at home, when teams will defend deep, does he have enough in his locker to find the space and make something happen? Last week I spoke about James Maddison. Every week in a number 10 position, he makes something happen for Leicester City. Another great assist this weekend. That's the kind of player that, has the ability to unlock doors. Different player to Lingard. But in these kind of games, a Maddison or someone of that ilk is someone who has the ability to unlock an opposition's defence. And until we get a player like that, we'll continue to see performances like that at home, because we don't have anybody to unlock defences.
Nav, where are you with Lingard?
Yeah, I think, look, to me, I don't really have a fundamental problem with Lingard. I think he's a really hardworking guy. It's always good to see someone come through the ranks, through the academy, and he puts the shift in. But, you know, as Rich says, can he pick a path? Has he got that vision that enables him to find the striker? Can he turn something out of nothing? I just don't think he's that kind of player. I truly don't know what his best position is. He's certainly not a wide player. He's not a winger. I've not seen anything that makes me believe he's a true number 10 in terms of someone that can pick a pass. But then you think, if not Lingard, then who? Because for me, I think Juan Mata, the days of him being able to do it at the top level are gone. I just don't think he's got the legs for it. I don't think he's got the strength. Pereira might be an option. But again, if you put Pereira in there, then you have to live with the fact that he is a fairly inconsistent performer. But, you know, it may be time for him to step up and let's see what this guy can do. But United are lacking in that position. They haven't got we don't have a match winner that can genuinely take that position. You could argue that you could push Pogba further forward, but then you just leave a gap in terms of who to replace Pogba with.
I want to be straight with you. I cannot stand Jesse Lingard. Every time I see him, I call him Weasel Boy. He's like that ratty little kid at school. He just irritates me for some reason.
You're being so harsh, Aaron. You're being so harsh.
I'm not being harsh. It's opinion's opinion. Opinion's opinion. I just don't like him. You know, we've had some of the most brilliant midfielders playing for us, and for me, it's just I don't understand where he plays. I don't understand what he does. I think the only thing I actually appreciate of him is that, you know, last season there were points where he was the only player we had who would hold on to the ball well. He would lose the ball. And I really, really sort of kind of appreciated that. I felt like an affinity to him because he actually did that. You know, in terms of Mata, I've always said that any intelligent manager, Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho, should have turned him into a more deeper player, a player who can play, you know, directly in central midfield, but even sort of a deep-lying playmaker, if you like, someone who can just control the game, who can ping a pass here and there. Because ask him to play on the wing, as Ollie has done a few times, and number 10, he hasn't got the pace for that anymore. He never had the pace in the first place, let's be fair. You know, he's not got a massive engine on him, one matter. But, you know, this whole number 10 issue, I can see becoming a bit of a problem for us. Very quickly as well, Mason Greenwood came on, and I saw him consistently drifting in from the right-hand side. Now, I want to ask, what is it with the United's obsession with buying strikers and making them play on the wing?
Interesting. Where do you begin with this? Because it does seem to be a constant theme. Are they really strikers, though, would be my question.
Martial was a forward, scored 20-25 goals in his opening season, got pushed out wide because of Zlatan. Rashford came in, scoring goals in his first season because, let's be fair, under Van Gaal, he got a good run in the second half of the season, ended up getting pushed out wide. And now Greenwood as well, he's ended up, you see him getting pushed out wide when apparently he's a goal machine in the reserves. I don't really get it. What is it with us and just trying to create wingers?
I think, if you look at our team, we don't really have much pace. And it just seems to be a coincidence that these kind of players, you know, your Rashfords, your Martials, have pace and therefore are slung out wide. But, you know, as you rightly mentioned, it's not their best position. But it just seems to be that they're the only ones who have the pace to kind of get in behind, which is why they find themselves out wide. But, you know, you can clearly tell they're not happy with playing out wide. I mean, Martial sulks for two seasons because he played out wide. Now he's playing up front. Now Rashford has to do a job, but we know Rashford wants to play through the middle. So I think it is literally just because of our lack of pace, which, again, wasn't addressed in the summer. And, you know, we think, OK, we'll do with what we have, but it's clearly already, after Game 3, showing that it's just, you know, our shortcomings are becoming so obvious. And again, it's down to poor planning.
But one thing I do notice, though, is that it does appear that Ollie is in favour of quite a flexible front three. So I think, you know, during the game, you see a lot, particularly with Rashford and Martial. You do see them switch quite a lot. You know, you do see Martial drift out left, Rashford through the middle, and then switch positions. So, and that does feel like it's something that's being drummed into them, that we want interchangeable people up front. We want, it feels like we're not going out and signing specialists for that position. We're not going out and signing someone who is an out and out right winger. You know, we're not signing the next Andrei Kanchelskis, for example. We're signing players, or we're using players in such a way that they have to be able to play through the middle, drift out right if necessary, drift out left if necessary. Even Dan James, I mean, he arrived as a left winger, but I've seen him play on the right for United, haven't necessarily seen him through the middle. But everyone does seem to be very interchangeable in terms of what this formation looks like.
Yeah, no, I completely agree on that. We might as well just have a team with John O'Shea's, really. I think that's a good solution to it all. Very quickly, I put out some tweets on social media on Saturday after the game, just asking for some reviews. Really want to sort of, talk amongst yourselves, but we can't really do that. I really want to pull these tweets up and just sort of get views from the fans. I put one up on one of our accounts at 90s United saying, let's hear from you, reviews on that shambles. Tweets, of course, will be featured on this week's United Redcast. Michael C tweeted in saying, who's next on the Who Wants to Take a Penalty list? Anyone? Who's next?
Leave it with Rashford. That was, I know he missed, but believe me, in terms of margins, that was not as bad a miss as I've seen. Leave it with Rashford.
Yeah, I agree. It was a good penalty. It was just unlucky. Like that's all you can say, really. You know, half an inch, you know, to the right, and it's a perfect penalty. So yeah, it's fine. I'm not really fussed by that.
Elsewhere, and Stu said it's been coming and more of it to come. Hashtag buckle up. Fabiola says, is there anything worse than that performance? I don't care how many penalties we lose. It's the game style that worries me the most. Jinder said, obvious statement, but with Palace sat behind the ball and with us not creating anything, why wait until the 82nd minute to bring Mata on? We were crying out for a decent holding midfielder after letting Herrera go so Pogba could play further upfield, but why didn't we borrow? And I think, you know, that's a really sort of valid point. We talked about Ollie's substitutions after the Wolves game and sort of, you know, how late it was bringing on Greenwood in the 89th minute against Wolves. Waiting to the 82nd minute to bring on Mata was poor. And obviously losing Herrera and, you know, dare I say it, Marouane Fellaini as a squad member. You know, he's not Ronaldinho, but he's effective in the air, if you like. And, you know, we've lost two members of the squad there and we've not replaced them. And again, we're talking about depth. Well, we had an opportunity to sign him. What the fuck is going on, guys?
That's the $1 million question.
I don't know. Alan, can we talk about the first goal, please? Because I keep looking at it and it just winds me up. It was such a bad goal to concede. It's something that's just really been bugging me.
They're all bad goals to concede, mate. They're all bad goals to concede. But go on, let's see your point, pal.
Listen, a long ball from the goalkeeper. Why is our £80 million centre-back not covering around there? How have, if a defender loses the header, why is our £80 million centre-back not covering around there? Why is he exempt from any scrutiny because he's a popular figure amongst the fans? That's what I don't understand. Because straight ball from the goalkeeper, you expect under-11s, if your defender misses the header, you have your back four to cover around. But we're all standing there. All three of them were standing there. Wan-Bissaka wasn't alert to it. Maguire wasn't alert to it. Luke Shaw wasn't alert to it. And the guys went through and scored. But that is just basics of defending, which is just so poor. You know, we look at Harry Maguire to, you know, last week against, you know, we call him a leader, we call him this and that. That goal should not be happening at any level. And it's out of order that, you know, that kind of goal is scored against us, especially at Old Trafford. That's wound me up every time I watch it.
The first goal, Jeffrey Schutt is what, 5 foot something? How is he winning a header off of Lindelof? How is he winning that header? That's the key question there. If you want to break down the goal.
No, agreed.
How is he winning that header off of Lindelof? No one actually knows. And ultimately, that's how, you know, Ayew was able to sort of, you know, grab onto that ball and put it into the back of the net. It was poor defending again. It was poor marking. But then again, defensively, I think we were poor, you know, for the second goal as well. If you look at the second goal, I actually wrote notes about it. I actually paused it again and I sat and, you know, watched it in slow-mo. And it's poor from Paul Pogba. Really poor from Paul Pogba. He's tried to turn on the spot whilst being marked out of the game by two players. He's tried to turn on the spot, do something clever, and sort of turn United, you know, back into attack it from defence, when Lindelof, in front of him, was open, was free, and could have literally simply knocked the ball downfield. Pogba's turned on the spot. He's been robbed fairly by Schlupp, and he started crying on the side of the pitch. He's waving his arms around, when in fact, it was a great challenge. He's done that. United have conceded. Where is Pogba? Still sat in his own half. Rashford was one who was sprinting back and was sort of level there, and he got there too late. And unfortunately, again, you know, it's a question of what are we thinking of defending? We're evidently a team of individuals rather than an actual unit, if you know what I mean. I was really optimistic about the backline, but again, you know, I can't say that one game's changed it, you know, but like, that's worrying, that's concerning, you know. Really.
No, I think you're right. I mean, what I would say is that there was quite a lot of time from when Pogba lost the ball to Palace scoring. So, fair enough, he shouldn't lose the ball there. You just shouldn't lose the ball there. But at the same time, we had a lot of chances to clear the ball, and we didn't. It was just a shambles of a goal.
No. It was still the same phase of play. If you watch the actual goal, it's still the same sort of phase of play, if you like. Pogba loses the ball. The ball is brought in, you know, sort of down the middle of the pitch. It's pinged out wide to Zaha. Zaha to... But he actually loses it off Benteke. Flipping Benteke. Benteke. Benteke, mate. He's absolute pony. And he's robbing Paul Pogba, you know, the world's best midfielder, off of the ball in midfield. It's an absolute shambles. But
the whole thing was just poor. I mean, it was just a joke, really. Just a joke.
I want to pick up on some of the other tweets and stuff that we received, because we received some really, really, really good ones. There was actually one I wanted to pick up on here. Martial Muff Pump Return says, Lingard stealing living, absolute bobbins. Pogba only world class in his own head, absolute bobbins. I don't know. Wayne Renshaw said, as a player, you're respected off the pitch. On the pitch, the respect goes out of the window. Holding onto the ball and getting robbed. People blame the keeper, but look when they won the ball back. In Italy, you get that time on the ball, not in the Prem, and drop deep. I think, obviously, that's about Pogba. Steve Barker said, mid-table mediocrity beckons. Stories of Pog and David De Gea leaving to be in the paper this week, no doubt. Nav, how concerned are you that De Gea hasn't signed a new deal?
I'm baffled more than concerned, in honesty, Aaron, because I simply don't get it. Now, I totally understood the De Gea situation when Real Madrid were on the spot for a new keeper. The guy's a Spanish international. His other half lives in Madrid. He's already played for Atletico. It's blindingly obvious that he would want to play for Real Madrid. But they went out and signed Courtois, so that clearly couldn't happen. Why he hasn't signed a deal since is beyond me, because, you know, what options does David De Gea have? There didn't appear to be a huge amount of interest for him in summer, where, let's face it, I think any one of Europe's big clubs could have come in had they wanted David De Gea and put money down. United, and again, this is all media talk, but the kind of figures that are being bandied around for this contract look almost Alexis Sanchez level, which, again, for me, seems way over the top. I mean, you know, still a great keeper, and let's not forget, you know, this guy has been voted Player of the Year at United for 4-5 seasons, and certainly in the post-Ferguson era has been the one standout, consistently world-class performer. Whilst I want him to stay, I don't want United to tie themselves up here on a 6-year contract at £300,000-£500,000 a week. You know, that's £15 to £20 million a year that we'll be paying out to David De Gea. I think it's too much. I don't know what De Gea's game is. Is he holding on until January, at which point he is able to speak to clubs worldwide in terms of his situation, just to see what's out there, because the bids aren't forthcoming at the moment. And if that's the case, sorry.
Why do I feel that we're going to see him go to Juventus next year?
Well, they are the masters of it. They love a good free transfer, don't they, Juventus? You know, if that's on De Gea's mind, then fine. You know, it feels like somewhere along the line there is a breakdown in communication. You know, does the club know of De Gea's intentions? If they do, then let's just withdraw the contract offer. Fine. Keep him for the rest of the season and spend the rest of the year thinking about who succeeds De Gea. Because, you know, we've been here in the past with Schmeichel moving on, with Van der Sar moving on. And it's fair to say United haven't had the best record of replacing long-serving goalkeepers quickly.
Well, I think that they're looking at Henderson. Dean Henderson, obviously, is their man to bring in. And, you know, although he's a good keeper, it'll be interesting to see how he survives in the Premier League. I'm a big fan of Serge. I love a bit of Sergio Romero. The fact that he stayed as Argentina's number one, bar obviously when, you know, he's had knee injuries, the fact that he stayed as Argentina's number one, even though he's just sat on the bench for 5 years, you know, sort of testament to either how crap the Argentinian goalkeeper department is or how good he is. But I really like him. I really like him, and I hope he gets a chance if De Gea does move on. Again, Robin Lindell saying, final third ball, why can't our players deliver it? Gomez as a number 10, why does it seem as we don't run at our opponents as we do from minute 75 today? Seems so strange. And I kind of get what he means. You know, it always feels like, you know, United, when they see the clocks ticking down, they're like, right, actually, shit, we should actually play. You know, we should actually do something. And there was a big difference between the first half and the second half and the way they attacked and the way they pressed with the ball. I saw an interesting comment about Ashley Young by Andros Townsend, you know.
I saw that today, yeah.
Talking about how, you know, United fans and Palace fans are sort of taking the piss out of him. And the thing about Ashley Young is, although his end product weren't great, I thought he ran a lot and he worked hard when he came on. We're obviously going to go on to Luke Shaw injury in a bit. Where do you stand with Ashley Young, guys?
I don't mind him, to be honest. At the end of the day, you know, he's what we have, isn't he? He always gives his all for the shirt. It's something that no one can deny. He gets a lot of stick sometimes because his own product is there. Sometimes he might be out of position. But you know what? He gives his all for the battle. Sometimes you need those kind of players in and around the squad. You need some of those, you know, we talk about lack of leadership. He is definitely, you know, a key integral leader within the dressing room. And, you know, like I said, he's going to be in the squad for quite a long time now with obviously Luke Shaw's injury. And I just hope he does well. You know, that's all we can hope for at the end of the day. I'm not expecting anything because we know what we get with Ashley Young is, you know, sometimes he might have a blinder and he's got a good delivery. And we know that he can do it, which is why fans get in his case, because when his end product is really poor. But listen, he's what we have. I can only wish, you know, say good luck to him and hope he you know, is solid, you know, in the coming weeks.
No.
Yeah, again, solid player. Gets way too much abuse, I think, from the fans. He is what he is. He is a professional. He keeps himself fit at his age. I mean, some of the sprints he was making, you know, he was making 50, 60-yard runs at the weekend. I have no problem with Ashley Young as a backup defender at United. Mm. I think they can do a solid job on the left, on the right, as a backup. The only thing, again, that bemuses me is that do we really not have any up-and-coming fullback at the club?
Whatever happened to Cameron Borthwick-Jackson? I was a real big fan of his, you know.
I think he's had some fairly uninspiring loans. I know certainly when he went to Leeds, he could barely get in the side. He spent some time at Scunthorpe as well in the last year. Doesn't seem to be hitting a level, I think, since that breakthrough season under Van Gaal.
He's still at United. He's still at United, yeah. Still at United, yeah.
Perhaps Diogo Dalot. You know, I think he can play both left and right. What, you know, why not give him the minutes? I think he would benefit in terms of his development.
No, spot on. And very quickly, I just want to touch on some final tweets. Ilhan has tweeted in at United Redcast saying, "We are shite. Appreciate the optimism." Then Ziad saying, "No squad depth. Barney has made a really good point and was only listening in to bits on the radio, but if Lingard's performance wasn't 10 times better than Wolves game, why is Mata not starting anyone else for that matter? Russell Turner's trying to be positive, says James looked good. Billy said lack of guile. And Garden Lighting London says need time and patience. So, yeah, that was the lowdown on social media this week following United's defeat against Crystal Palace. Guys, anything else you want to pick up on? It's been an interesting sort of opening 40 minutes. We're going to come back in the second half. Plenty more to talk about on. Anything else from Palace you want to pick up on?
Your mate you there tweeting, we need to be patient. I mean, what do we need to be patient for? I don't understand. Ollie's been manager since the beginning of the year now. He's had enough time to put his stamp on the squad. He's had the whole pre-season. I know it's only game three, so we're not going crazy. But, you know, these are the kind of games that we need to win. You know, it's not about being patient. You know, this is Manchester United at the end of the day. I'm not saying, oh, you know, hark back to the glory days. But, you know, if we're going to, you know, really have a good season and, you know, make a mark on things, whether it's top four. No, I'm sorry. These are games that we should be winning with our eyes closed. And patience is maybe you're playing against for example, the Wolves game, or playing against another, you know, a top four side or a top eight side. You know, Crystal Palace at home, I should be hearing we need to be patient because we played rubbish and we got the result we deserved. So until we get our act together, these kind of results are going to keep happening. We play like that against Southampton away, we'll lose that game. So we need to get our asses in gear and start, you know, attacking teams properly and start winning games. And that's just a fact of the matter. But that's just my opinion.
One last point from me, Aaron. I think this is the youngest United starting lineup that we've had in the last two or three matches since United have been in the Premier League. And I think that youth does bring a level of inconsistency, which we're clearly seeing. But have a look at the bigger picture, because outside of Liverpool and City, I don't see anyone else reproducing any type of consistency. Look at Spurs' results at the weekend, losing at home to Newcastle. So this could be a funny season. I think there's going to be lots of ups and downs. I'll still judge Ollie on, does he take United back into the top four? Because I think he does have the tools at his disposal to do so. I think United can put themselves back in contention. I don't see Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal achieving that level of consistency that puts them so far ahead of where United are at the moment.
Very true, very true. Right, chaps, let's take a pause. This is the Manchester United Red Cards. We'll be back in a moment. Okay, we are back. This is the Manchester United Redcast. Welcome to the second half. My name is Aaron Paul. I'm joined by Nav Singh and Richard Amova. We're looking back at United's 2-1 defeat at the hands of Roy Hodgson and Crystal Palace at the weekend, but looking at some other stories that have sort of emanated from the press and from games this week. Gents, Luke Shaw injured again, a month. We talked about him last week, didn't we? We talked about, bless him, little Luke. I just don't know what to say. I really don't know what to say. He's picked up I think it's a muscle injury and he's out for a month. But, you know, again, we're going to be relying on young Dalot. Rojo, maybe? Marcus Rojo, left back, one fancy in?
Let's hope not.
But, yeah, again, another setback for Luke Shaw.
Yeah, it is. I feel sorry for any player who gets injured. You know, clearly the guy doesn't want to be injured. The bigger question mark around Luke Shaw is, has he got the sustained fitness? Is his body capable of playing 40 to 50 games in a season at the kind of intensity that is required for that position? Because fullbacks these days are, you know, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but top-end fullbacks must be putting in some serious mileage game to game. You know, that is a position that really requires pace, power, stamina on an ongoing basis. My real fear and concern is that maybe Luke Shaw's body just isn't up to that.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a big concern. I know Luke Shaw gets a lot of stick about his general fitness. But again, I think it's an issue within United, though, because surely there should be someone at the club being able, you know, someone should be able to identify that. Is he, you know, this is someone who's very injury prone, especially after his big injury, which again, very harsh. And I know it's, you know, everyone, it's never nice to have a big injury like as what he had, but that was a while back now. Maybe his body, as you rightly said, Nav, is his body just capable or not capable, sorry, of producing 30, 40, 50 games a season at high intensity, like the likes of Andy Robertson, like the likes of Trent Alexander-Arnold? I say no. Again, why is no one at the club identifying that? Because that lack of planning, that lack of identification means that we lose our £30 million fullback for a month. Whereas if that was identified again in the summer or beforehand, when it was underperforming, that issue is rectified. You know, you look at Man City, you've got great backup. We don't have a backup for that. We have Dalot, who's not proven. I don't mind him, but you know, there's something wrong at the club. We either get Luke Shaw fit and firing properly, or we get another left back. I don't see where the grey area is here, personally.
I think there was opportunities this summer. I think we saw Tierney move to Arsenal for what looked like a reasonable fee for a decent left back that would have given Luke some proper competition. But, you know, Spurs spent the majority of summer trying to offload Danny Rose. Again, I think Danny Rose would probably be a step up from Luke Shaw in terms of consistency of performance.
I agree. I like Danny Rose a lot, personally. It's always, as you said, you never want to see anyone get injured, but it's just frustrating that, as you said, you've identified two players on the top of a hat who could have easily come in. I know you mentioned Firpo last week as well, Nav. And again, it's just we either invest in getting this player fit and firing and ready, or we move on. This whole, you know, haggling and just wasting time when you know he's going to get injured for a bit of the season. It happens every season. You know, there's going to be no change here. You know, anyone could predict Luke Shaw would have an injury, a kind of muscular injury at some point of the season. It's just annoying that it's come so early, so soon in the season. And so we just hope Ashley Young comes in and does a good job.
Yeah, he's out for a minimum period of a month, Luke Shaw. I really think this has got to be his sort of last season at United. I think, you know, they've got to look to sort of move on from him now and go and get a Chilwell or someone of that ilk. I know we're going to end up paying a stupid figure, probably £50-60 million for Ben Chilwell because Leicester don't necessarily need the money. But I think United need to start moving on and looking ahead in terms of the left-back situation. Other stories, not really quite sort of Newsweek around the club this week, really, really, really quiet. But about David De Gea, I just want to pick up on the mistake and ask, have we seen the best of him? Or, you know, I've got a lot of people turning around and saying, you know, you've seen the best of him, that's it, it's game over. But don't forget, we didn't sign Van der Sar to be 34, going 35. Is it a case of De Gea hasn't got a stable defence in front of him like Schmeichel and Van der Sar did? Is that the difference between them now and well, them then and that, you know, us now?
I think judging De Gea against those two keepers is incredibly harsh for the reasons you've just outlined. Far more stable squads, fabulous defensive lines in front of them, less of this chopping and changing. I mean, De Gea, let's not forget, is now on his, what, fifth manager in his time at the club? So that's five sets of tactics, five changes. I take this stuff with a pinch of salt. He is a goalkeeper. He's there to be shot at. And when you're the goalkeeper for United in a game like Saturday's, the guy's had very, very little to do. It's unfortunate that perhaps the one save he did have to make, he didn't. I don't think this is a downward trend for De Gea. I know there were some mistakes at the back end of last season, and there was a lot of talk as to whether his personal situation or his contract situation is playing on his mind, and that could be it. I truly don't know, but I don't believe that this is the end of De Gea as a top level keeper. I mean, the guy's what, 29 years old? Right. I think, you know, it's not like he's a player that relies on pace. You know, he's still got the same frame. He's not suddenly started piling on the pounds. I still think he's one of the very few truly world-class players we have, and I think he'll carry on being a top-line keeper for the next 5-6 years.
Rich, anything to add on that, Paul?
Yeah, I think it's the same as what Nav said, really. I just think it's just a bit disappointing that we are seeing these errors creep into his game. I think because he has been so good for us over the past 3 years, I think that's why fans are a bit lenient with him. And I understand, if it wasn't for De Gea, you know, we would be in a much worse situation over the past few years. But, you know, we have to look at it here and now. It's the same that he should be making. He knows that. It's ultimately cost us the game. It cost us a few games last season as well. Whether his contract thing is affecting his performances, if that's something that, again, the club has identified, then let's get it sorted. We either get him, you know, give him what he wants, let him sign a deal, and then he gets back to his normal game, or we get rid of him and, you know, we play a goalkeeper whose head is focused and on the game. Because if you look at most of the top sides, when you need a keeper to make a big save in that moment, and De Gea has done that for us in the past, but, you know, Edison probably saves that on Saturday. I know Alisson definitely saves that on Saturday. And De Gea, we all know, is capable of that. But if his head's not in the game, then he's going to make mistakes, as he has done. So we just need to get that situation sorted out so there's no grey area. There's no excuse, you know. So we can't tell him to say, oh, maybe his contract is playing in his mind, because I think it's a bit of a cop-out, I think. You know, at the end of the day, he's been paid X amount to do a job for United, and he's done it very well in the past, but at the moment it's costing us, and it's cost us again on Saturday.
When we talk about David De Gea, we think of someone who has saved us so many times. Are people too hung up on the fact that, you know, they compare him to those moments of pure genius where he's managed to pull out a save from the top corner to keep us in a game or to salvage us a point instead of a loss? Are we too hung up on that, looking at that, and do we not appreciate the fact that this guy is actually human rather than he's a robot?
I do agree with you. You know, I mentioned, you know, he has made so many ridiculous saves in the past, and the saves that he shouldn't be making, if we're being honest. And I think that's why fans and pundits alike aren't really giving him too much criticism, because he is bound to break at some point. Because, as Nav said, our defensive shape, our midfield shape, our squad shape, it's not the best. So he's going to have consistent pressure, and it's eventually going to crack. You know, the other top goalkeepers don't face as many shots as he does. So he is going to crack at some point. And it's only natural, because certain issues aren't addressed across, you know, the rest of the squad, that more pressure is going to fall on him. And, you know, he is only human. You're right, Aaron. He is going to make mistakes as a result of that. But it's just frustrating me. So there's so many factors which I'm playing into this that, you know, as a fan, you're just frustrated that these things aren't being sorted out.
Yeah, certainly. Very quickly, the story surrounding Fernando Llorente and a 2-year deal at Man United is, well, it won't leave. It's sticking around like a bad smell. Does anyone have anything to say on that? I mean, yeah.
I prefer not to speak.
I would be disappointed if that's true. I mean, let's face it, if that's what we wanted, why get rid of Fellaini? Yeah, you know, he could have done that job quite comfortably. And you know what, if we were in the market for a, you know, a bargain free transfer, why didn't we go out and sign Ribery, who was released by Bayern Munich?
That's a great question.
Why not? Yeah, that's a fair point.
You know, that's for fear it's
working Sanchez, can it? So we might as well.
Yeah, I mean, even the Sanchez thing is sort of dragging on every day. There's a new angle towards it. Apparently, Inter Milan want the deal done this week. Well, I bloody hope so, because the transfer window shut in like 5, 6, 7 days or something like that. So that's sort of stating the obvious. But, you know, again, it's going to be an interesting week. We take on Southampton. 12:30 at St. Mary's on Saturday. It's Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this one. This is one where every game now I'm going into going, I don't know how I feel about this one. And then I thought Crystal Palace was a complete and utter buy, but no, evidently not. Chaps, how's it going to go? They picked up a win. They beat Brighton by 2-0 on Saturday. You know, not necessarily their best performance. Southampton, Brighton had Florian Andone sent off. But, you know, what should we be looking out for?
Well, the thing I've noticed with Southampton is that they've become a side of runners. You know, they've become quite a hard-working side now since Mark Hughes moved on. So I think I don't see this being some sort of pushover where United can turn up. And let's face it, I don't think anything's a pushover at the moment for United. You've got to hope that the result on Saturday has spurred Ole and his coaching team on this week to think quite seriously about things that we've discussed today. You know, if we're going to have that shape, who's the number 10? You know, if we think we need that finesse of touch, then fine, put one matter in, but at least train with that shape and make sure that we're really clear on what we're doing here. Who's going to be the replacement for Luke Shaw? You know, the guys need to be up for it. Now, they need to realise that with the fact that Arsenal are playing Spurs on Sunday, there's an opportunity to pick up points on what will be key rivals for that fourth spot. Mm.
No,
I think it's fine there. I think I'm not going to... Last week I said, you know, it should be, as Ivan said, a bye. I think they've got a point to prove. You know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I mean, we're looking at... In the Palace game, if Rashford scores that penalty, if we get the relevant decisions that we should do, we're probably not all doom and gloom today, to be honest. But that's a fact of the matter. I don't think things are as bad as what they seem, although I've been very down on this pod, so I do apologise. But it's a game we should win. If the players turn up and play as to what they're capable of, you know, we've got you know, good talent. No, I think Martial's picked up an injury, apparently, but you know, we should have enough to beat Southampton. I'll be very disappointed if we don't leave St Mary's with all 3 points on the Saturday lunchtime.
Yeah, certainly. United taking on Southampton at St Mary's. It's a 12:30 kickoff. Chaps, how's it going to go?
2-1 United.
I'm going to say 1-0. 1-0 United.
2-1 United for me. 2-1 United for me. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure. This is the Manchester United Redcast. Follow us on Twitter at United Redcast. Drop us a line if you want to if you want to be featured, have your opinion featured on this pod. Yeah, good to hear from you once again. Come on, you Reds.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at unitedredcast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.